decide to do this.
No one else is going to do it for us.
Let us trip some balls. Shall we start with the problematic, the psychomatic, the hydromatic?
It's greased lightning. Lead us off.
What did you think of On Purpose With Purpose?
So the opening track was sort of a salute to old man hip-hop and, you know, talking about how he was in a garage when he couldn't afford to put a car in one and, you know, how he wasn't one of these old rappers who kept rapping about shit like he was 19 and, you know, all that sort of stuff. Uh-huh. And then he proceeded to do an entire album of all the shit that people who rap about shit that they're obsessed with when they're 19 went on to do. And it was, it's a fucking no from me, dog. I'll get that out of the way real early. It starts off with this kind of reflective old man stuff, and I thought, okay, this might be a little bit like, you know, a bit like Abs on that fucking Format album. But then he spends most of the album talking the same dumb shit that he was deriding in the first track. So, you know, Twin Sisters is misogynist as fuck.
I was gonna say,
it was a Motley Crue song from 1982 or something.
How? Why? What are you? I was out, you know, doing some gardening stuff down the hill, and that track came on again today on the headphones, and I'm listening to it probably a little bit more closely than the first time, and I was like, why? Why did you write this song? I don't understand. There was 30 seconds of some nice slow jams about the NHS, and then everything else was like so either problematic or cliched. I thought he had an oath. Like, the first time I listened to it, I probably backgrounded a little bit, and I was like, oh, your flow and your beats, like, the balance between the flow and the beats is not too bad. Like, the flow was that
quarter beat off that fucking seems to be, you know, as is the fucking the fashion at the time, like tying an onion to your belt. The production reminded me a little bit of Inflow.
Yeah.
It's not him, obviously. It's mostly Emil and 10 Billion Dreams, as you put it out last week. But a lot more kind of soft, jazzy grooves to start with. But then the trap beat started up, and I'm like, oh, for fuck's sake, here we go. Obviously, with an hour and change album, there's going to be a mixed bag on there. But I wasn't expecting the mixed bag to contain quite so much dog shit.
Yeah, I don't know. You're picking out three or four things from the bag and going, well, when am I going to get the gem? And that's the other thing, is there wasn't really a gem in this album.
No. There's some white dog shit, which you don't really see very often anymore.
Yeah. Look, it wasn't Triple J adjacent Australian indie pop, so that's about the only positive thing.
I felt like it was an overcompensation in the wrong direction.
Yes.
Should we talk about the snuts then?
Yeah, I'm like, geez, that's really quick. We've really ripped through that album, but I don't really want to talk about it anymore.
No, it was an hour and 8 minutes that I walked back.
Yeah.
So my reaction to the snuts, and interesting you mentioned a certain youth network, was they get Triple J in Scotland now. I'm really sorry to hear that, Scotland.
It was pretty inoffensive, wasn't it?
It was the same fucking twee jingle 10 times, and the first time sucked, so...
Well, the only good thing I'll say for it is I put it on the outside.
Is it better than Courting? Because Courting was... at least it didn't have fucking what I should.
I had it on when we went for a swim. And as background music while you were splashing around the pool, it was fine.
Yeah, when you're underwater and you can't hear shit, you got earplugs in. It's fucking tremendous.
We might record the shortest ever tribute balls because it's all three albums are pretty easy to explain, I think. Like, there's... Could you really do more than 7 minutes on either of these albums?
My main conclusion was to remind you of your line from last week.
Occasionally you have to let me pick a joker.
I would contend that we don't, and this album is why. Jokers are there to be earned. No, there's really nothing. I mean, Adam had pointed out in other media commitments that these guys are touring. So, you know, fill your diary with other things to do when they do tour of New Year. Because these guys are tedious.
I don't know whether there's anything in their music that leans itself to being better live, that's for sure.
Better dead, do you think? Could you tell?
It's quite, like, maybe you could take a Valium and go and sit in the crowd and watch them. That might
go full Rufus to Soul Spec.
Yeah. All right, talk to me about the Devils then.
Not a band I would recommend taking a Valium and sitting in the middle of their set, because you'll probably get trodden on.
Yeah.
The Devils. These guys are much more fucking dirty rockabilly blues than I remembered. Because I remember them as being, you know, of the, you know, Queens of the Stone Age desert rock thing because of the Alan Johannes thing. But I'd forgotten that they'd had a bigger connection with the Dirt Bombs and John Spencer to start with. They are basically like early White Stripes if Meg wrote all the songs and did all the singing. Also, if she could sing and drum, which is two things that Meg, unfortunately, were not top of the job list for Meg. But, you know, we love Meg. This fucking rules. I loved it. I thought it was brilliant. I enjoyed this album even more than the album from 2021, which I don't understand why it wasn't in my top five, because I'm going to re-listen to it. It's just riffs, sleaze, goth horror, grossness, stupidity, brilliant. Loved it. More of it. But again, I'm not sure I can get 7 minutes out of this.
Yeah, I can't remember. Maybe it was the Aussie indie pop kids that we were talking about. There was someone recently we were talking about that had rock put in their bio, and we were sort of...
it was Middle Kids. They won the Rock Album of the Year in 2021, ironically enough.
And we were like, rock? There's no rock in here? This album is a rock album. Like, I was just like, oh, this is a rock album, right? Okay, yes. Let's go.
Yes, capital
and
R.
Capital R, capital O, capital C, capital C.
Yes. It's literally called, as the nice lady points out, this is the new Devil's record. It's called Let the Fucking World Burn Down.
Not much to explain. Highly enjoyable. Yes. I think is the there's no depth. There's no hidden depths to this. It's all up front. It's no. All.
They're not kidding. But yeah, like I said, like early White Stripes, it's just loud and obnoxious, but much less stylized and much less. I mean, their bit is much more. They're named after a fucking 1971 Ken Russell numsploitation movie. You know, one of those ones with, you know, gothic horror and lots of tits. And that's really their vibe. I mean, they started out, they're from Naples, which is obviously very conservative Catholic part of the world. And they're coming out with songs like Put Your Devil in My Ass and stuff like that in like 2016. So the vibe is, you know, the vibe is pretty clear. It was pretty obvious what they were here to do. That was to rock and or roll. If you ever wanted to see like a female John Spencer on the sticks screaming her ass off, these guys, they're actually surprisingly good live too, because I would have thought, oh fuck, these guys would be terrible. No, they were. I listened to a live album of these and they were really good.
Yeah, like I would have expected that. Like this sort of band, you know, not this good, but I used to have bands like this at the Alley that were very, very straight down the line, but just amazing experiences live, because the energy.
Yeah. But two pieces can be a bit variable, because you're really dependent. And I say this partly because the White Stripes were actually pretty shit live. Part of that was because, you know, their drummer couldn't keep time.
I wonder whether that's, though. I think a two piece should be like
ragged,
capped at a zoo. Like the zoo should be the biggest place a two piece should ever play. Now, no, Royal Blood, you know, sold out stadiums and dumb big tours. But like, to me, that infectious energy you get from this huge sound from two people sort of needs to be experienced in dirty little boxes.
Yeah, I'll accept that. The one time I saw the Black Keys, that was at the zoo. I'm trying to think of other two pieces. The Mess Hall, I saw it
Man, I've seen those guys a lot. They're fucking good.
Yeah, I saw them on must have been a home bake side stage. I think it was like the third stage. They were headlining the third stage, so it was a smaller tent, but that worked really well. But when I saw the White Stripes, that was headlining the second stage at Livid, I think it was, and they were. I mean, it was a great experience, but they weren't tight like a live band. It kind of contradicted everything you kind of expect out of a live band, which is that you're playing time and in key.
Well, like I've talked about this a lot, that Bourdain episode with the Kills and Jack White playing a house party, essentially.
Yeah.
and that's the sort of ethos I think the White Stripes were A, formed in, and B, probably excelled. was, you know, backyard parties and small venues in America.
Yeah. You'd imagine that's how they started, because they started as a as a couple. So they might have just been playing for their friends at you know, little shows and gatherings and shit.
Well, you're definitely on the week, Doc. What shall we do next week?
I'm going to pick the new album by Wellington Ratbags Darts, who have got a new album out called Dangerous Day to Be a Cold One. If it feels like the chats, it's because they are probably a more intelligent, more Wellington kind of chat. But the least expected anticipation I heard from this was from our friend Ace McWicket, who said, I'm really looking forward to this album coming out, which was like the least likely darts head I would have expected to hear from. So,
well, it's not a trip hop recommendation from Ace, so we can probably trust it.
No.
All right. Well, I'm going to pivot again. I'm going to go for an American rock band.
You've pivoted so many times, you're going to fucking, you know, topple over. You get dizzy and throw up down the front of your shirt.
And
if you probably aren't wearing one, because, you know, listen, you don't need to know this. You wish you didn't know this, but Bezo usually podcasts with his shirt off for reasons and often forgets to switch the camera off. And it's like, well, I don't need to see them tits.
I do not have a shirt on. That is true.
Do we need to start a Patreon where listeners who really know that could just
buy Bezo's shirt?
The Bezo. No, I was thinking more the. I was thinking more whoring you out, basically, you know, if you want to see a bit of OnlyFans, a bit of Bezo cleavage.
Look, when the Philippines World Cup fundraising drive starts, this podcast will become, I know we don't have the largest audience, but we will become a sponsored podcast. I will be shilling for any cent, New Zealand peso, whatever I can get from anywhere.
You should do a calendar.
A calendar.
Men of League style.
Shirtless podcasts, one for each week.
Please notice, folks, you have to pay extra not to get me.
Yeah, that's right. If you don't pay us, we'll send you the calendar. I'm going to go with an American rock band that, despite being, you know, recommended by Rolling Stone, still I feel has some potential, and they're called Sheer Mag.
We have done Sheer Mag before, I'm sure. I'm sure we did Sheer Mag's an album in the 2015-16 areas. The kind of 70s glam rock feel, but with, it's kind of 70s glam rock feel. I ran out of words.
Playing Favorites is the album.
Yes, it is.
I really wanted to go with Mannequin Pussy. Thought that was a potential album for this week.
That's actually apparently a really good album too. But a different kind of feel.
Shall we pick that as the Joker then? Or are you keen on the Liam Gallagher and John Squire album?
Bezo, what have you done to deserve the Joker for the past nine months?
Nothing at all.
Let's do the Mannequin Pussy thing, because the Squire fucking Gallagher thing I would like to do, but we might as well. We might forget to do Mannequin Pussy if we don't do it now.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, man, that looks interesting, that album. It is I Got Heaven.
Yes. You got a big bump on... Stereo Gum and Pitchfork, I think, which are the Generation X versions of Rolling Stone.
Yeah. All right. Any other musical takes of the week, Doc? We will not be doing the Kanye West versus Ty Dolla $ign.
No, we're not doing any of his albums, because I think they've got a couple of them coming out back to back to back to back.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. What was the Sheer Mag album that we did?
I can't
remember. Need to
can't
Feel remember. Your Love, I think the album was, in 2017.
Oh, yeah.
Meet Me
yeah,
in the
yeah,
Street,
yeah.
Need to Feel Your Love. I don't think it landed. I think they had a lot of good good singles, but then it didn't really, the finished article didn't really land. But what's interesting about this is this is their first album on Third Man Records. And Third Man, of course, the label of our old mate. Is that Jack White, or is that... You Google Third Man, you end up with the cricket position in a movie. Yeah, it's Jack White's label.
So they're
on Jack White's label.
Ben Blackwell and Ben Swank, based in Nashville, Detroit, and Soho, London.
I think that's the place with where the inside is full of upholstery shit. Yeah, here he is. The Nashville location. The label's headquarters is located in a less prosperous neighborhood, which is home for the Nasty Restroom Mission. White's areas, blah, blah, blah. So he has a record store, novelties lounge, the label's office, a live venue and bar, and a dark room, photo studio. So the novelties lounge is a whole lot. So this is basically a whole lot of Jack White's brain. It lives in lives in there, but he seems to be franchising it now. They've opened an office in Soho with the same kind of crap.
Mm. They own a couple of live venues too, which is interesting.
Yeah. So they've been doing, you know, obviously his own stuff, like the White Stripes, the Raconteurs, the Dead Weather.
I do like the Dead Weather.
His own albums, but he's also been doing stuff like fucking Loretta Lynn, Captain Beefheart. Yeah, mostly himself. Johnny Cash re-releases, Bob Dylan re-releases, Carole King, Primus. It's interesting.
That's the vinyl side, right? Because they press vinyl, so that's probably what they're doing.
They're releasing special content on that. So this is not a list of the artists that are that they have on their books, even though I wasn't paying attention and thought it was. Doesn't really say who's on their label, because that would be useful information. But I have seen, but it's not. Shemag aren't the sort of act you'd expect to have on that kind of shit.
I'd love him to do another Dead Weather record. Quite like that record.
Olivia Jean is on Third Man. I was trying to think of who we had
relatively recently.
Who was Alison Mosshart's single stuff? The Hives light at Third Man Records. That's a good album. So that's them just doing
live stuff. It looks like they're a little bit like trying to do a little bit. Like a Criterion Collection for bands.
Yeah, that's the vibe.
You know, re-release their stuff on vinyl when the record company doesn't want to do it. So maybe you can buy the vinyl rights for a record, and they promote the vinyl versions, which would be like quite a lucrative little side business, I would imagine.
Yeah,
like,
the people who are willing to pay for that shit are going to be the sort of people who are willing to pay over the odds for that shit.
I was shocked. Last time I went to JB Hi-Fi, how big their vinyl collection was.
Oh, it's much bigger than the CD collection.
Yeah, it's nuts. Like, for someone like me who sort of ran through, two or three shops in Brisbane to buy vinyl in my youth, the fact that a franchise store is just stocking huge amounts of vinyl, like, you know, admittedly it's fairly mainstream sort of stuff. It's not. Nothing particularly obscure, but yeah, just that it's that prevalent, I guess, is pretty crazy.
Fucking hipster.
Funny. All right, Doc. I guess that's it for this week.
Yeah, I don't think we have anything else. I'm trying to get to the bottom of this page so that it fucking gives me a list of their artists, but it doesn't want to do that. Stupid fucking piece of shit.
Very
me fighting with a website live is great.
Just to peter out into nothingness, clicking on a web page.
It will be fantastic when we edit it up.
And by we, I mean you.
Yes. No surprises there. Free shipping on domestic orders over $99. Exclusions apply.
Just as a little editing side note, you can absolutely edit this story out. But we went and saw Andrew Huberman live last weekend. I bought Vanessa tickets for her birthday, and his podcasts are very, very tight and dense. But live, he said a lot, and I was like, I bet you his editor. Because when I used to do the editing quite a bit, like
yeah, an unfilter.
I would edit my first pass edit. I didn't even listen to it. I could recognize that waveform and just clip it out of my. Because you don't say very much at all, but I say quite a bit, and that pause
That's natural language. I don't have a problem with that. You know,
sure,
because it's conversational. But, we're not reading the fucking news here.
But I would say it like 52 times in a podcast, and I would just edit it out. And I was like, I bet you the sound engineer that does a Human Lab podcast is very intimate with the waveform for
just as a find and replace, like it's Word.
Yeah. Anyway, that just cracked me up a little bit.
Who the fuck's Andrew Huberman?
He's a science podcaster.
Why? Yeah. No money in that shit.
Evidently, people are still interested in science, Doc. I know that seems hard to believe.
Not enough to fucking pay them. Not enough to fucking fund it, are they?
No. Fortunately, it's a little bit like the it's the people at the top.
Yes. If they get all the money they were giving to Joe Rogan, they gave to science, we wouldn't be in this situation.
To be fair to him, he sort of started out.
He wasn't always like this.
No, he's really good. He's trying to bring sort of research science to the layman.
Yeah, but he's also trying to bring a lot of absolute shit to the... Oh, you mean Huberman? Or I was talking about Joe Rogan.
Oh, no, not Rogan. Huberman's thing is getting a stream of research and trying to distill it down so that a reasonably smart person who's willing to listen to an hour and 40 minutes of a podcast with a lot of dense information can sort of understand it. And he's not trying to, I don't know, it's really interesting. He's basically trying to present as much of it as he can to get you to go and look further if you're interested. Now, he covers a lot of fucking topics and it's really dense. Like, I can't listen to it. I can't background it. I can only sort of listen to it where I've got an hour's drive in the car where I can concentrate. It's that dense.
That sounds like fucking work. I'm not doing that in my fucking time off.
But, like, he's been really successful in trying to do what he set out to do, which was, get people more interested in science. Like, he even says, like, he started the podcast and thought it would be done in 6 months, and it's been successful enough that he's just done, six sold-out shows in Australia, and I think he did might have done a couple in New Zealand as well. Yeah, anything that's trying to promote science can't be a bad thing, Doc, I think.
Joe Rogan thinks he's trying to promote science.
Yeah, but he's doing it from that half-assed bullshit way.
The Aaron Rodgers school of absolute fucking nonsense.
Yeah, like Huberman, if you go into the show notes of Huberman, you can go and read the articles that he's referencing, right?
Yeah, you can do that with Probably Science too, which is a science podcast by a couple of stand-up comedians in LA.
Yeah.
Which is the only science podcast I listen to because it's funny. But they also, the three of them have all got science backgrounds. Like, they've worked in biotech, or one was a mathematician and one was involved in biomedical stuff.
Yeah, and Huberman's a pretty well-credentialed neurologist. Like, he's not...
I don't want to hear from... I hang out with too many boring fucking cunts. I don't want to hear... I want jokes, man.
Well, yeah, you're not going to get jokes. He had jokes in his live show, but his podcast definitely does.
Make me laugh or fuck off. If I really want to do something boring and dry, I'll do the work that they pay me to do.
Anyway, none of this should make the podcast.
I might leave it in just for fun. And I'll edit in extra ums for you just to make you sound worse.
Yeah, you're just gonna
cut and paste the um.
52 ums.
You're gonna sound like that fucking terrible song from the 90s.
One of the boys the other day, we were driving and he said, "Dad, can I have that song?" And like, he's trying to think of the song, and I'm like, "Yep, I'll put that on for you." And he's like, "I didn't tell you the song," and I'm like, "Yes, you did." And then I put it on, and he's like, "Oh, very funny, Dad. Really funny."
No, you should have done "Mbop" by Hanson just to get the proper effect. I'm surprised that hasn't been ironically claimed by this generation, because they. We claim Rick Astley, so someone's got to claim Hanson.
Do they? I don't know about that.
Well, they're better than the fucking Jonas Brothers.
Yes, I will agree with you there. That don't. Yeah,
I think Hanson leant into the idea that we are literally a one song, one joke band.
It's funny that the Spice Girls have had a bit of a revisionist history, I would say, for a fairly
to say what they say they were what. Because they were more important than Britpop to Britain.
Yeah, that's true, I guess.
They were much bigger than Oasis or Blur.
And definitely internationally, weren't they? They had a much bigger...
Well, Oasis were enormous, but we have this sort of idea that Britpop was enormous in Britain in the mid-90s, but the Spice Girls were much bigger again. It was...
Yeah. It's a little bit like INXS. Like, I can't get out of my head that INXS were a pub band from Australia, and they sold out like the Rio Stadium with 150,000 people in it for three nights or something. Like, they were a huge touring rock band.
My favorite bit of the internet the last week was somebody got the CD from Michael Jackson's Bad and the CD for INXS Kick and put them on top of each other, and it looks like Michael Jackson is the guy on the skateboard on the cover of Kick.
I love Kick. Kick's a great album.
Sometimes you kick. Sometimes you get kicked. That's the philosophy that we try to have every week here on the Balls Podcast, Tripping Balls.
So from I did confirm that they played a venue, like what is left of In Excess played a venue in Gladstone for New Year's Eve, and it's just like the people in that show in Gladstone played in a 150,000 seat venue in
played
their
Wembley,
career.
Played fucking, you know,
yeah,
did the whole thing.
Look, I know you just, but do you need to? I guess.
Is this not like the guy who, you know, who moves up through the divisions to the Premier League and then plays in every division on the way back down again? You know, he's playing non-league football, you know, fucking Hackney Marshes, because they just can't not. Is that to be celebrated or is that to be pitied, I suppose, is the question.
Well, yeah, because, like, I love stories of cricketers, you know, ex-Test cricketers playing, you know, down the leagues as they get older, like, because... How cool would it be if you were like third grade and you rocked up and you know, Alan Border was playing third grade that weekend? That would be fucking ace. That would be really cool.
Not for him, though. So I don't understand what's in it for him.
Because you probably still like playing, and that's probably the level that you can still play at. Like, again, on Kimber's pod, evidently Faf du Plessis played, like, not village cricket. What's the... It's like the non-professional highest grade of cricket is in the UK. When he retired, he went and joined one of those teams in England and was just sort of kicked.
Well, fucking whichever Morkel lives in Brisbane does that.
Yeah, and so
I think
that was short.
Mornay Morkel or Porn Snorkel as he should have been named.
That they were short one week. They couldn't get a full team together, and they're like, "Oh fuck, we're gonna have to play with 10 players." And Faf's like, "Oh, one of my mates is in town this weekend. Do you want me to get him to play?" And they're like, "Yeah, sure." Thinking like, "Yeah, one of Faf's mates from South Africa probably, probably knows a bit of cricket."
Yeah, might be somebody you grew up with.
It was AB de Villiers. So you play village cricket and you rock up, and Faf and AB de Villiers are opening the batting.
It's over.
So everyone else is probably, oh, we'll just kick back for the rest of the day then, boys. I just love it. Didn't say,
at least, have the decency to bat wrong-handed or something.
Didn't say, oh, I could probably get AB de Villiers to come play. No, I've got one of my mates from back home.
They would have settled for Daryl Cullinan. I mean, they didn't have to go that hard. We're talking about Daryl Cullen, and it might be the end of the music podcast. Except you think, fucking, who's the Daryl Cullen of In Excess? Is it Gary Beers?
The famous story of Gary Beers is he rocked up. Didn't he rock up at a pub and they had an In Excess covers band and didn't have a saxophone player? It's like, don't really need it.
Stage a one-man protest and chain himself to the thing.
All right, Doc. I'll catch you next week.
So you're saying they In Excess cut down on the beers. Hello? Is this thing on?